Namo Vishnu Padaya Krishna Pastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Samanita Namane Namaste Saraswati Devi Gauravani Pacharane Nivasesha Sunyavadi Paskatya Desatarane. Yesterday, hearing about Kamsa, who we could say had very few qualities that we would like to imitate, but there was one quality that he did have. He was absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. He was so absorbed in thoughts of Krishna, especially after the bow was broken by Krishna in the sacrificial arena, the bow, Vishnu's bow that was given to Lord Shiva, that was given to Parsaram, that was given to Kamsa. When Krishna broke that bow, after having heard that the breaker, whoever breaks this bow, would be the one who kills you, at that time, the first thing Kamsa did, being his nature, was to fight the inevitable. He sent a battalion of soldiers to attack that breaker of the bow. And Krishna took one part of the bow, and Balaram took the other part of the bow, and that battalion of soldiers, they beat them and killed them. Kamsa felt the sound of the breaking of the bow to be like a thunderbolt hitting his own heart. And from that moment on, especially from that moment on, he could not sleep. He could not eat, practically speaking. He was just simply thinking about Krishna. He had attained a perfection that he could not get Krishna out of his consciousness at all. Krishna had taken over his consciousness. But unfortunately, his motivation was fear. But yet, because that fear was focused on Krishna, it is considered exalted. It is considered glorious. Because whenever the consciousness becomes focused on Krishna, like the sun arising in the realm of darkness, it purifies, it ends that darkness. So Kamsa became purified by that. He met ultimately the divine fate of being killed by Krishna, which is the greatest fortune. And because he was always thinking of Krishna, he actually attained sarupya mukti, that he attained a form similar to Krishna's. So, absorption. The residents of Vrindavan, the great devotees, are absorbed continuously in thoughts of Krishna. When they chant Krishna's names, they don't have to think, oh, now I have to think about Krishna. No, because of their attraction to Krishna, because of their affection for Krishna, because of their taste for being with Krishna, for serving Krishna, Krishna naturally lives within their consciousness. And this is ideal, this is perfection, that Krishna takes up residence in the core of our hearts. And what we are trying to do with our more preliminary stages of chanting is make the core of our hearts clean enough to be a suitable residence for Krishna. So, the two points that we so far have spoke of in relationship to these pastimes, the killing of Aristasura, the residents of Vrindavan were calling out to Krishna with such taking shelter of him. They knew no one else except Krishna as their Lord, as their shelter. So Krishna immediately came to them, immediately protected them. So we should chant with that type of taking shelter, with that type of taking focus, and that plus always being absorbed. We should make these attempts to absorb our consciousness in taking shelter of Krishna. So why don't we spend a few minutes chanting Krishna's names, and even though it's near the end of the day, It's a good time to chant japa. It's a good time. It's the second part of the day. It's a good time to chant Krishna's names. So we take our beads with reverence and we take shelter of our spiritual master, the Vaishnavas, of Srila Prabhupada, of Sri Giridhar Govardhan, Sri Gaura Thai, Sri Radha Govinda, Radha Gopinath. And we, in a longing way, in a pleading way perhaps, we ask them to help us chant Krishna's names, taking shelter and with absorption. So begin, please. Just try your best. Om Agyanatamirandasya Jana Jana Salakaya Chaksu Samilitan Jena Tasmai Sri Gurave Nama Sri Chaitanya Manobhistam Stapitam Jena Bhutale Sayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Sapandantikam. The topic, the general topic, is attracting the attention of Krishna. And as we had mentioned before, in the Katas, two points came out in attracting the attention of Krishna. And if somehow we can attract the attention of Krishna, our life is so successful. To take shelter of Krishna and to become absorbed in thoughts of him. This consciousness is actually the consciousness of all great souls. And this particular class is called The Power of Prema, the power of love for Krishna. And of course, this is the ultimate way of attracting the attention of Krishna. Well, here we go again. Is there a secret that I'm not aware of today? So, continuing, just directly where we had left off, we'll begin speaking about the beginning of the 37th chapter of the 10th canto, and then we'll continue on from there. So, after Aristasura had been killed by Krishna, then Kamsa was told by Narada Muni that it was actually Krishna who was the eighth child of Vasudeva and Devaki. And it was Krishna and Balaram who had been brought across the Yamuna by Vasudev out of great fear. And it was Krishna, or these two, who had killed all those associates of Kamsa that Kamsa had sent. So Kamsa started his plan making. And in that plan making, he was so fully absorbed in Krishna consciousness, but not devotional Krishna consciousness, but consciousness averse to Krishna, but yet absorbed in thoughts of Krishna. So now in the beginning here, Sukadeva Goswami continues to speak. And Kamsa had immediately, the first thing he had done is he sent Kesi after Aristasura to Vrindavan. And Kesi was his right-hand man, so to speak. And Kesi was considered like his prana. And Kesi was the most powerful of all the demons. So, sent by Kamsa, Kesi appeared in Braja as a great horse. And he ran with the speed of the mind. And he tore up the earth with his hooves. In some ways, what happened to Kesi will be quite similar to what happened to his friend, Arista. So Kesi wanted to show his power. He was huge, and Kesi means hair. And his long mane, the amazing amount of hair, his mane that was coming from behind him as in the form of a horse, was huge, and he was huge. And he wanted to show his great power, his great speed, by running here and there and brush back and forth so quickly. And he was neighing so loudly. And he was tearing up the earth with his hoofs. The hairs of his mane scattered the clouds and the demigods' airplanes throughout the sky. They were watching this event. And he terrified everyone present with his loud neighing. Now, if I was expert, I'd be able to imitate loud neighing. And there would be a reason for this. But no, I won't do it. Now, while he was acting in this way, there was a specific purpose in his mind. He wanted to frighten away anyone who was a protector of Krishna, including Lord Balaram, with his loud neighing and crying and his hoofs that were as hard as iron, tearing at the earth. He wanted to kill or frighten everyone who would be able to protect Krishna, and then he would have an easier time of killing Krishna. This is how he was thinking. But then, when the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that's Krishna, when he saw how the demon was frightening his village of Gokul, Sa Gokulanam, Bhagavan, because of his love for Braja and because of his love for the Brijbasis, he considered this his village, his own village, Swagokulanam. So the demon was neighing terribly and shaking the clouds with his tail. His tail was so high, he was huge. And the Lord came forward to meet him. Keshi. Was searching for Krishna to fight. So our acharyas explain a few more details in this. When Krishna came forward and saw the horse who was neighing, Krishna also began to make sounds, either like neighing also or making some sounds that you'd use to control a horse. And the horse thought, he thinks I'm a horse. And he was so insulted. I'll show him. Krishna began making sounds that you use to control a horse. So when the Lord stood before him and challenged him to approach with those horse-like sounds, the horse responded, I'll show him I'm not a horse, by roaring like a lion, Magendravat, like a lion. Srila Jiva Goswami describes some more details about this. It had described how the residents of Vrindavan, when the horse Keshi was coming, the cows became so frightened. They were all in the cow barn in their quarters. And the quarters, the doors were bolted. But they were so terrified, they broke through the doors. They broke through the bolts. And they ran outside, even though it was dusk. They ran outside because domestic animals, when it is dusk time, when the sun sets, they naturally come home, even without you telling them. You see this with the cows. You can see this in Vrindavan or any place there are cows. They have a natural mechanism in them that when it's time, when the dusk, before the dusk comes, they start to wander home. But instead, due to the ferocious nature of Keshi and how he was acting, the cows bolted from home and ran out into the forest. And then the cowherd men, headed by Nanda Maharaj, they started leaving their homes because the cows had left. The horse was there, and they started going to the horse. And suddenly, Krishna rushed out in front of everyone and stood before the horse. And all the residents of Vrindavan, they were terrified, but they thought, Krishna, what are you doing? Don't go in front of this horse. His mother, Mother Yashoda, Yashodama, said, oh, Krishna, what are you doing? Don't go to this horse. He appears to have bad intentions. And Krishna replied, what can I do, Mother? This horse doesn't have a rider. I should ride him. Don't go. Go home, Krishna, she said. And Krishna said, this is not good for you, she said. He said, I cannot tell the difference between what is good for me and what is not good for me. And he stood in front of the horse. Then Yashodamaya turned to Nanda Maharaj and said, I have never spoken an impolite word to you in my entire life. But why are you letting this boy go forward? He's so tender. And the horse is so ferocious. Why are you letting him go forward? Why don't you strong coward men go forward? So everyone was just thinking about Krishna in this dangerous, seemingly dangerous situation. So there he was, Krishna standing in front of the Lord, in front of this Keshi. And Keshi ran towards Krishna in extreme rage. His mouth was gaping, it was wide open, as if, and he was huge, as if he was ready to swallow up the sky. This was part of his tactic. Rushing with furious speed, this was his power. He rushed to Krishna, this unconquerable and unapproachable horse demon. He tried to strike the lotus-eyed Lord. So Sukadev Goswami is saying he's face to face with Krishna, and Krishna's eyes are like lotus flowers, lotus petals. They are soft, they are beautiful, they are all attractive. But Keshi is not moved by them. He is not touched by this tender boy and his beauty. Rather, he simply wants to kill him. He is amazed at this. And this shows us why actually we cannot see Krishna, because even if we did see Krishna, we wouldn't see Krishna. Kaliya, the serpent, he saw Krishna, but his heart was so filled with envy, he could not see Krishna. So until we have the proper type of consciousness, even if we saw Krishna, we would not see Krishna. When Krishna walks into the wrestling arena, Raso Vaisa, different people see him in different ways. The wrestlers, look at the soft, tender boy. When the leaves fall from the trees and touch the body of Krishna, Krishna's soft body, tender body, turns reddish. That's how tender his body is. But the wrestlers, when they see Aravinda Lochanam, they see a thunderbolt. And fear-filled Kamsa, when he sees Krishna, he sees death. yayatamam prapadyante. What our consciousness is like by Krishna's reciprocation, that we will see. And when our consciousness, and this is in one sense the theme that will come out right now, it has already come out, it comes out in the Bhagavad Gita, it comes out later in the chapter when Narada Muni will appear before Krishna, will come out in the next chapter when we hear the words of Akura, but Krishna reciprocates with the consciousness that we have. And he will reveal himself proportionately to our consciousness. And if we have bhakti, he will reveal himself as the Supreme Lord. And if we have bhakti in the mood of the residents of Vrindavan, which is so, the prema, the love, is so powerful. It so dominates their consciousness that it completely controls him. They know he's the Supreme Lord. They know it. You are not the Supreme Lord, they say. You are not an ordinary boy. You are actually the super soul, the indwelling super soul in everyone's heart. But they don't care so much for that. Just like, say, if there's such a wealthy man, or we were speaking about the example of a king, the king's mother, she knows his power. She knows that he commands the armies and the treasuries, so many servants. But if she's a tender, soft-hearted mother, she always is thinking about him as her son. And she'll be worrying about if he's getting enough to eat and if he's working too hard and who's feeding him and this, and worrying about him if he goes to the battle. He's her, no matter how old he becomes, he's just her son. So when that mood is so dominant in the residents of Vrindavan, the Madhurya factor is so dominant in them, the love for Krishna, the sweetness, the mamata, the feeling that he is our village boy. It's like they've grown up in the same house together. One of the devotees in Perth was telling me that when he was growing up, he lived in Bombay at that time, I think, an apartment building, not even in a village. And when he and the other young boys who lived there in the apartment building, they used to wander around from one apartment to the next, and all the doors were open at all the time, and every door someone would feed him. And he said that until he was 4 years old, and he would rest in everyone's house and everywhere, there was so much affection being exchanged, like a village. So he said until he was 4 years old, he did not know which ones were his mother and which ones were his father. There was so much affection. So this is what this kind of village life was like. And just imagine what Braja was like. Krishna was everyone's lala, everyone's darling. Everyone was talking about him, thinking about him. So if one, somehow or another, by the mercy of the whole Guru Parampara, by the mercy of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, if we develop that kind of love, bhaktyamam nabhijananti, then Krishna will reveal himself in this most sweet aspect, Brajanjanandana, like that. So, Aravinda Lodshanam, he could not see Krishna. And he tried to attack Krishna. So his tactic was this. He opened up his huge mouth so wide as if he was going to swallow Krishna. And then he quickly, as he approached Krishna, he turned around. And with his two front legs, he began to try and trample Krishna. And when Krishna was not fooled by his tactic, and he dodged Casey's blows with his hoofs. And then, with his arms, with his two arms, he didn't seize one leg and then one leg. He grabbed them both with his two arms, and he whirled them around in the air. And because one can ask, why didn't he just kill him? So he wanted to show him some contempt, insult him some. In that sense, he was giving him another chance. So avagyam, we know that word in the offenses. Guru avagya means acting with contempt or not accepting fully the spiritual master, and that's a namaparad. So Krishna, he did Kesi avagya, and he with contempt and smiling the whole time as he did it. He threw him, he whirled him around and threw him 100 bow lengths, quite a distance, I think a football field approximately. Just as Garuda might throw a snake. And then Krishna, still smiling, just stood there, right in front of him. What's next, Kesi? Kesi was unconscious, but upon regaining consciousness, he angrily got up, and this time he opened his mouth wide to swallow Krishna. And he again rushed to attack Lord Krishna. And by Srila Sukadeva Goswami is using the word harim, who takes away, he who takes away, it is to be understood, he was now going to take away his life. The Lord smiled, and as he rushed towards him, remember, he would run practically at the speed of the mind. Krishna thrust bhujam uttaram, his left arm, and Srila Vishnu Chakravarti Thakur said, he put up his thumb and said, you're rushing with your mouth open, it looks like you want to eat something. Well, if you want to eat something, eat this. And he inserted his left arm with thumb upraised in his mouth. And because Sukadeva Goswami saw that Prickit Raj was somewhat aghast, that Krishna's soft, tender arm, which goes around the arms of the gopis that the cowherd boys play with, that it was entering this huge, horrible mouth of this horrendous horse asura, he said it was very easy, and the outcome was just as obvious as if a snake would enter the hole in the ground where a mouse would live. The outcome is quite obvious what will happen. And then immediately, because Krishna's arms started expanding. Now this is important because in Krishna's Natalila, his pastimes as a cowherd boy, he would not perform anything that would demonstrate his great power. He would not grow in size. He would not become a great hand and swat him or something like that. He wanted to remain the mood of a cowherd boy because he wanted the love of the residents of Vrindavan not to be disturbed. So once the hand, his left hand of course is the weaker hand, was in the mouth of Kesi, he expanded it. And the demon tried to bite him. And then his arm, Krishna's arm, felt as hot as molten iron. Tapta maya sprisho, to his touch. It was hot, full of this heat. Within Kesi's body, the Supreme Personality's arm then expanded greatly. And like a diseased stomach swelling because of neglect, as Lord Krishna's expanding arm completely blocked Casey's breathing. His legs kicked convulsively. His body became covered with sweat. His eyes rolled around. The demon then passed stool and fell on the ground, dead. But it was not over yet. The mighty arm Krishna withdrew his arm, came back to a regular size from Kesi's body, which now appeared like a long karkitika fruit, which is a type of cucumber that when it becomes ripe, it splits and breaks apart. And that means that Kesi's body was split and his tail and legs were all split from the body. He had been broken apart completely. And no one thought, oh, how has this terrible thing happened? How has Lord Krishna done? And all the devotees, all the Brijbasis felt such happiness because the great hero, Krishna, had again saved them. And he did it without the least display of pride. Avasmito also means he was smiling still. He was smiling and not proud because he so effortlessly had killed his enemy. So in this way, the Lord then accepted the demigod's worship in the form of flowers rained from above. Now, after Kesi was killed, Krishna went, because Kesi had been, he came to what we now, the Yamuna, by we now call Kesigat. He came there and he was running back and forth to show how powerful he was. So then Krishna, after killing him, was at Kesigat. And then he went nearby, which is to, there's a ghat called Chirgat. And our acharyas mostly say that Chirgat is Chirangat, where Krishna rested after killing Kesi. And there, while he was alone, resting, then something else happened. He was alone, and Narada Muni privately approaches Krishna at Kesigat. Now, we heard about this yesterday in Jagatvini Mataji's talk. But we'll go over some of the details here about what Narada Muni had in his mind. Now, he approached Krishna privately when none of the cowherd boys were around. And our acharyas give some reasons for this. Because the moods were so different. Narada Muni, he had a consciousness of Krishna as the Supreme Lord. He appreciated these wonderful Vrindavan Leelas and all of Krishna's Leelas. But he was thinking of Krishna as the Supreme Lord with such reverence. So this would not mix with the mood of the cowherd boys. They were always joyous and playing and laughing and joking and pushing and shoving and doing this and that and feeding each other, as Maharaj was saying. So it just would not mix. But there's another reason too, is that what he was going to tell them, tell Krishna, was that now, Krishna, the time for you to begin your Mathura Leela had now come. So it is time for you to go to Mathura. And if he said this in front of the cowherd boys who would be staring at him, who is this person with a veena who's some feet off the ground? What is he doing? They would joke and they would laugh at him. But then when he would say, now it's time for you to begin your Mathura Leela, Narada was afraid they would take out their sticks and beat him and chase him away. This is what our acharyas say. Because ultimately, these little boys, these residents of Vrindavan, they are the most powerful of all. They have the most devotion and they have the most power. So he begins. Now, he walks over to Krishna, and this is the first verse he says. Krishna, Krishna, Prameyatman, Yogisha, Yogesha Jagadishwara, Vasudeva Akhilavasa, Satvatam Pravaro Prabhu. So the first thing, he approaches Krishna by chanting his holy name. Krishna, Krishna. He's so ecstatic to be seeing Krishna. And in his ecstasy, the holy names erupt from his mouth. Krishna, Krishna, Prayatma, Prameyatma. This means that Krishna, there are many meanings of this. Krishna, you are unknowable. You, Krishna, are immeasurable. Now, these words that he is using from his point of view as Devarishi, Sorishina, are very important because in Vrindavan, Krishna is not thought of in this way. When we hear the leelas of Krishna in Vrindavan, we hear how Krishna is going to leave. Akura comes and we hear that gopis are so upset. We hear that Nanda Maharaj is thinking in this way. We hear of the different heartbreaks. We hear of Krishna herding the cows. We hear of him holding in his left hand yoga, not even in his right hand. I mean, everyone knows that when you're holding food, you keep it in your right hand. Krishna, like a coward boy, like just a village boy, is holding the food in his left hand, yogurt mixed with some rice and fruit. So when you hear these things, from our point of view, which is less than the Brijbasi's point of view by perhaps quite a bit, they don't have to think of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. We have to think of Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead when he hears Leela. Therefore, in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, there is always an intermixture of Krishna's childhood Leela when he acts just like a little boy and he's stealing butter as a little boy would steal butter. But immediately, he opens his mouth. Mother Yasoda opens his mouth to look and see how his little teeth are going. And she sees the universe in his mouth. She pulls out a stick as if to punish him. So this restless boy, Mother Yasoda, actually, her mood was that why she tied Krishna to the grinding mortar was that he was so restless. And he was so frightened with her as the stick. She thought he was going to run away to the forest and never come back. So she decided to tie him up. This is her thoughts about the unlimitedly powerful Supreme Personality of Godhead. There is so much Shuddha Vatsalya Prem, pure parental motherly love for him, that the fact that she sees the universe in his mouth and belly, it does not affect her love for him at all. Different from Kunti Devi. When he's crying, he's actually afraid of Mother Yashoda. This is the most astounding thing that Kunti Devi points out. That those tears that are coming from Krishna's eyes. One time I went to the Vatican and you see all the paintings, the incredible paintings on the walls and the different carpets. And most of so many of them have, there's like a great effulgence coming from the side of the carpet. And there is some religious sadhu looking person going like this or like this when he sees the great effulgence. And look at our religion. Different. We see Mother Yasoda holding a stick from the side of the carpet. We see the Supreme Personality of Godhead going like this. Please, Mother, I won't do it again. I promise you. I promise 1,000 times I won't do it. I'll never steal again. I will not do it again. Real tears, his kajal, the black is running down his eyes. He's immeasurably powerful. So we cannot forget that when he performs these leelas that make him appear as if he's a young village boy. But he is a young village boy in one sense. But he's the unlimited supreme personality of Godhead too. And to see him acting as a village boy, it makes us ask the question, why is he doing that? What is causing this unlimited Lord to act in this way? And the answer is, it is the pure, incredibly, unlimitedly powerful love for the Supreme, for Krishna, that's so specific in a particular mood, either Sakya Rasa, Vatsalya Rasa, or Madhurya Rasa, or Dasya Rasa. It is so powerful. It controls the all-powerful. And it causes him to perform the most wonderful Naralila. He's Lila Prashottama. He causes him to interact with his devotees who are his own energy. He's not looking outside of himself for pleasure as if he needs something. He's Purna, completely full, complete. But yet, when interacting with his Ladini Shakti, his ecstasies increase ever, ever more and more and more by these interactions. Otherwise, just imagine, you're in the concept, this concept of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, this personal concept is so attractive that Srila Prabhupada was convinced that if people would read this Krishna book, their whole concept, even if they had no understanding of this Bhagavan Ishwara, of this Brahmeti, Paramatmati, Bhagavan Itis, even if they had no understanding, his conviction was, this is so attractive that anyone who reads this book, their consciousness will be affected and they will become devotees. He was so attracted. So he thought that anyone who touches Krishna, they must be attracted. Who is more? You have an old man sitting on a throne. No one knows anything about him. He's sitting on his throne. And the good people are praying to him. Please do this for me. Please do that for me. Please kill my enemies. Please do this. Please do that. Please, college degree, jobs, cure my broken leg. What a concept of God. It sounds like the worst job in existence for eternity, just listening to everyone's complaints and desires and everything. But that's not Krishna. And that's for the good people and the bad people. It's, you know, thunderbolts. You have done something wrong. And you have sinned. It's not all attractive, Krishna. But Krishna is so attractive. So this Krishna, Krishna, Aparamatma, he's immeasurable, even though he's at Keshi Ghat, just like looking like a coward boy. And he is a coward boy. With his peacock feather, Vajrayanti garland, etc. And not only is he unmeasurable, Atma, our acharyas say also, Sridhar Swami says, it means mind. So unknowable, unknowable mind. So Narada, his internal meaning is saying, your mind is unknowable. I'm going to request you now to come to Mathura, but you are so enchanted by your devotees, the love of your devotees in Braj. I do not know if you're even going to do this. You're a yogesha. You have mystic powers. I'm not asking you to leave Braja. Yogis know how to expand their form. So what I'm asking you is to just start performing your pastimes of Mathura, because you are Jagat Ishwara. You are the controller and protector of the whole Jagat. You protect Vrindavan from Kesi, from Arista, from Pralamba, from this one, from that. You held up a mountain. But you are not only Vrindavan Ishwara, but Jagat Ishwara. So now is the time for you to fulfill the purpose of your incarnation. You have to kill the demons. Puritranaya sadunam vinashaya jadaskritam. And not only that, Vasudev, you are known as Vasudev, the son of Vasudev, but your father, Vasudev, who carried you to Vrindavan and left you there, and you were just a baby. He has not seen your form yet, this beautiful Kishore form. Krishna's just blossoming into his 10-year-old, beautiful, with his eyes become more and more lotus-like at that time. So now, and Kamsa has just put Vasudev and Devaki into prison. So, please, how can you not save and protect them? And Akhileshasva, Akhila means you're the shelter of all beings, but also Akhila is the name of Devaki. And Vasa, you were living, you had your residence inside of Devaki, and she's in prison now. Are you going to be able to tolerate that? Satvatam Pravara, and he calls him, Satvatam means the Yadu dynasty. You are the Pravara. You are the best member of the Yadus dynasty. Oh Prabhu, he's starting to call him names and trying to pull him respectfully and gently out of Braja to Vrindavan. He's the Lord's Bhakti Shakti, Narada Muni is. And this is the desire of Krishna, and on one level, just like the king who's finally in his palace, the doors are locked and he's playing with his little son, and he's having his son and he are exchanging so much affection. They're on the ground, they're moving little warriors, little pieces of wood around, and this is the enemy, and they're playing and playing, and someone knocks on the door. You have to come to the court right now, and he has to pull himself away from this sweet rasa. He's still the king when he's playing. He has all the power of the king, but it's mugdata. His consciousness is not kingly consciousness when he's playing with his son. It's just fatherly love consciousness, or wifely love consciousness, or brotherly love consciousness. So intimate, but yet it's time for him to go to court. But still, it's the same person. So one could say, you mean Krishna is just like a king and he's undergoing these internal thoughts just like you're saying, and he's struggling with himself like that. We don't, no one can know what the consciousness of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is like. No one. He's immeasurable. No one can know it. But we can know a little part, and we know that this world is a reflection of that part. We know certain qualities of his. So one may say, even, well, why can't he do both at once? Why can't he stay in Vrindavan and go to Mathura at the same time? Just he's Yogesha, he can do it, the yogis can do it. And he can, but he considered that. If he was in both places at once, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakura explains, then Nanda Maharaj would find out. And he would, it would disturb the nature of his love for Krishna. Why couldn't the residents of Vrindavan go there? Because, as Maharaj was saying, he can't. Because the love of the Mathuravasis and it would be very restrictive. And also, at some point, that we'll wait till later, for what will come out later to come out later then. But let's see, here's the actual translation of this verse. Oh Krishna, Krishna, unlimited Lord, source of all mystic power, O Lord of the universe, O Vasudev, shelter of all beings, and best of the Yadus. You, more of his prayers, you are the Supreme Person. You are the ultimate controlling deity. You are Mahapurusha Ishvara, the shelter of all souls, Akila Arasa, and Atmanat Masraya. And you are hidden in everyone's heart, Gudo Guha Saya Shakshi. You are the witness in everyone's heart. Are you going to be able to stand by and just witness what's happening to Vasudeva and Devaki by the hand of Kamsa? You fulfill your desires by your own will, Satya Sankalpa. You can do what you want. You always get what you want. You have an Icha Shakti. Your desires are fulfilled just by the fact that you're desiring them. So Krishna may say, then why are you asking me to do something then? And Narada Muni is saying that you are in my heart. And by your inspiration, it is time for you to go and perform your Mathura pastimes. And thus, by your inspiration, I am humbly making these suggestions to you. And you, that same Supreme Lord, have descended, avatar, avatirno, for the destruction, vinashayad cha duskritam. He's reminding him of his mission, of various kinds of demons. These are daityas and pramatas and rakshasas, and the protection of the godly, sadunam rakshanaya cha. And it is our good fortune that you have so easily killed ferocious Keshi, who all the demigods were so afraid of. You have killed him as if it was a game. Now, O Lord, there are so many other demons waiting for you. Starting in 2 days from now, Parasvo, Ahani, next day and the next day, because this is the day of the Dwadasi, that in the morning of the Dwadasi this took place, the day when, after the Ekadasi, when Akura will come. So the next day is the Triodasi, and then the day after that on the Chaturdasi, because on the Chaturdasi is the day that Lord Shiva is worshipped, and that is the day of the Dhanajagya. So on that day, Chanura, Mastika, these wrestlers, and the elephant, Kamsa, I will see you kill them in these following days, O powerful one. Almighty Lord, I will see the deaths of Chanura Mastika and other wrestlers, along with those of the elephant Kuvalayapita and King Kamsa by your hands. He's reminding him of what will happen and the exciting pastimes that will take place. Then I will see you kill Kalayavana, Mura, Naraka, who is Bomasura, and Panchajanya, the conch demon, after Krishna goes to Gurukula. Sandipani Muni asks him to bring back his dead son, and in that way he kills this Panchajanya and he becomes the Kansha, some of the acharyas say. And I will also see you steal the Parijata flower and defeat Indra. When Indra asks you to get back the earrings of Aditi, his mother, that Bhomasura had taken away. So you, O Krishna, you will go on the back of Garuda and you will take with you, as if you're going out on an outing, a pleasure outing, you will take with you Satyabhauma. And you will kill Mura there and you'll be known as Murari. And then you will kill Bhomasura. And it's so interesting that Bhomasura, who was Krishna's son, became an asura by association with Banasura. And Krishna killed Bhomasura, but he didn't kill Banasura. And there are two reasons why he didn't kill Banasura. He just cut off many of his arms, so he only had a few left. But because Lord Shiva, his devotee, interceded on behalf of Banasura, because Banasura was a devotee of Lord Shiva. And he begged him, please spare him. And the Lord did. This is in Sonitapur and Jyotisigapur, something like that. These cities are in Assam, actually, right now. And then Krishna brought back the... And it's also interesting that because Satyabhauma is Krishna's Bhushakti, and Krishna had promised the mother of Bhomasura, I would not kill him without your permission. So Bhushakti, Satyabhauma, at one point said, kill him, when he was attacking. So therefore said, okay, this is your order, I will kill him. And then he came with the earrings to give them back to because it was done, because Indra had requested him. And then Krishna asked for a Parijata tree to bring back for Satyabhauma, because there was some little rivalry between Rukmini that Narada Muni had done between Rukmini and Satyabhauma. He had instigated some little interspousal rivalry there. And Satyabhauma saw in the heavenly planets a Parijata tree. And she said, you gave a flower to Rukmini, can I have a flower? And Krishna said, why take a flower? I'll give you an entire tree. And Indra said, you can't have the tree. This is a heavenly tree. See the dangers of having a big, big, powerful position. Very hard to learn these lessons. And the Bhagavatam, it says that of all the different Janma, Aishwarya, Shrutisri, Bhir, these are the different opulences that a person can have in this world. A good birth, a wealth, learning, and beauty. And the most dangerous one, the most intoxicating of all of those four, is wealth. Because with wealth, if not used properly, one really thinks himself a controller and is powerful and looks down on everyone else. So therefore, wealth should be used very, very properly in Krishna's service. So that was Indra's fault there. And we can't take it with us. That is the illusion that Kamsa could not get beyond. Death is staring, and we can't take it. We can take nothing. That's the proof that nothing is ours. But the material world and Maya bodily intoxication. It is so intoxicating. Prabhupada once said, compared to the intoxication of thinking that this is me, every other intoxication is like salt and pepper. I will then see you marry many daughters of heroic kings. This is after killing Bulbasaur and paying for them with your valor. Then, O Lord of the universe, in Dwarka, you will deliver King Nriga from a curse. He had become some type of a lizard in the well. And he came back into this powerful king when Krishna extended his hand and touched him. And he resumed the form of a heavenly king. And Krishna said, "Oh, my dear king, please tell us how you became in this position of a lizard." And then he told his story, which is a sad story, that he had unfortunately given the same cow just by mistake to two brahmanas, and he ended up, because of that, of not fulfilling his promise that he to the brahmanas, he had to become a lizard. So Krishna on one level was teaching how important these items of culture are that protect us, this sadanshar. But on another level, Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur answers the question, how is it possible he committed this offense, okay, and he became a lizard, but what was it that made him see Krishna? How could an offense cause you to see Krishna, an offense on a brahminical level? And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur said he was so charitable that once he donated to a brahmana who wanted some bhagavatams, if I remember correctly, and he was so generous, he gave him a set of these holy books and he built a temple for him to shelter him. So that service to the devotees, that's what caused him to see Krishna. So amazing and consistent. And you will take for yourself the Shyamataka jewel, another amazing pastime of Krishna's, together with another wife. Also, this one involves Akrura also. And he gets two wives out of this one pastime, the second and third wife, Jambavati and Satyavarma. And then you will bring back a brahmana's dead son from the abode of your servant Yamaraj. This is Sandipani Muni's son. These are not in order of occurrence. Narada Muni in his ecstasy doesn't put them in order. And thereafter you will kill Pondraka. And then you will burn down the city of Kashi. This is, I think, in the 66th chapter of the 10th canto. And then, and as Jagatrini Mataji was saying last night, and Krishna's hearing all these pastimes of what he's going to do from Narada, and he's just thinking, I have to do this, and will I be able to come back to Vrindavan? Because my father won't even drink water when I'm not present. How will they live? How will the cows live? How will my friends live? How will the gopis live? Everything dries up when Krishna is in Aprakat Leela. So at each pastime, Krishna is thinking practically, how long will I be separated from my beloved? How much the prema controls Krishna? How powerful is love for Krishna? And bringing this point just into the japa, and we'll hear about this in a moment from Srila Prabhupada, this is really what we want to do. We want to chant with some affection for Krishna. We may not be able to have affection on this level at this point, but some appreciation. Krishna, God is supplying air for me to breathe. He's providing water, the sunlight, at least something. I'm not making my heart beat. I'm not making the scientists will say it's the sympathetic nervous system or something like that. But how is that happening? It's just begging the question. Where does this come from? And Narada is going to say where it comes from. Everything comes from. But Krishna is just thinking. He can't leave in his heart Vrindavan because of the love. They've captured Vrindavanam pratyaja padam ekam, not a step out of Vrindavan. He can't do it. So he's thinking, when is it going to end? And then actually where it does end when he returns to Vrindavan is after the killing of the king of Chedi, Sisupal, during the great Rajasuya sacrifice. And right after that, he kills Salya in the 76th and 77th chapter. And then in the 78th chapter of the 10th canto, he kills Dantavakra. And then it's so interesting how he kills Salva outside of Dwarka. And then he gets a message that Dantavakra has attacked Mathura and he wants to fight. And usually, before going anywhere in a battle, Krishna would take the blessings of his parents and Ugrasena before leaving. So Krishna should have ordinarily entered into Dwarka before going to kill Dantavakra. But this time, he did not, because he knew that they would never give him permission to go to Mathura, because they knew if he was that close to the Yamuna River, he would just cross over, and they did not trust that he would ever come back. So he says, so Narada Muni is saying, after the killing of Dantavakra, this all will happen. You will go back to Vrindavan. And then at that time, you will actually... And he comes, when Krishna comes, he crosses, he stops in Vishramgat in Mathura after killing Dantavakra. Then he crosses the Yamuna in his chariot. Then he puts on cowherd boy clothes again. And he has his flute. And he goes in to Vrindavan. And everyone hears the sound of the rattling of chariots. And they look. And they can't move because they see Krishna. He has returned. So Krishna stays there for some time. But all the time, the residents of Vrindavan are nervous. And they glance nervously and continuously at the chariot because that which brought him has the capacity to again take him away. And finally, they tell him that. And Krishna says, I will show you what this chariot is for. It expands in size. And they all board the chariot. And they leave for the spiritual world. But of course, they're in the spiritual world. They're in the highest part of the spiritual world, Vrindavan. But Krishna plays these pastimes in that way. So, Narada Muni says, I shall see all these heroic pastimes along with many others that you will perform during your residence in Dwarka. And then at the end, he says, at the end of these verses, he says, Gyani Kavi Bir Bhuvi. These pastimes are glorified on this earth in the songs of the transcendental poets. And this, as we will hear, the day after tomorrow, is really our life. To be in touch with Krishna through his holy names and the songs of Krishna's pastimes made by these transcendental poets. Gyani Kavi Bir Bhuvi, Narada Muni says. Now there's a few more verses in his prayers before we'll end. I will see you appear as time personified. Serving, Kalosman, Lokachaya Kret, serving as Arjuna's chariot driver and destroying entire armies of soldiers to rid the earth of her burden. This was Krishna's mission. And he gathered all the overburdened of the earth of soldiers that Mother Bhumi had complained about in one place. And in 18 days, Namitta Matram Bhavya Savya Sachin, and through Arjuna and others, he rid the earth of this overburden. And Krishna's telling him, you have to do this. You have to sing the Bhagavad Gita for the nourishment of the people of this world. Rather, Narada is saying this. And then Krishna was pleased by his words, and Narada reciprocated by offering two prayers. Let us approach you, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, for shelter. You are full of perfectly pure spiritual awareness, and you are always situated in your original identity, this Supreme Lord. So when Krishna is performing his childhood pastimes in Vrindavan, he is still the unlimitedly powerful Supreme Lord. He's always in his actual identity, but he's performing these pastimes captivated by the love of the residents of Vrindavan. He's acting just as the dearest part of his heart, just as he wishes to act. You're always, regardless of what it seems, you never are an ordinary village boy. An uncultured ordinary village boy who does not even know how to wear shoes. And therefore he marks the land of Vrindavan with the marks of his lotus feet. You're always situated in your original identity. Since your will is never thwarted, you have already achieved all possible desirable things. And by the power of your spiritual energy, you remain eternally aloof from the flow of the qualities of illusion. So when Krishna performs his childhood pastimes, what's pushing him, what's motivating him, what's driving the engine of his leela, has nothing to do with what drives the engine of the activities of the children, the youths, the adults of this world. Everyone in this world is like a puppet being pulled by the strings, karputli. Is that the, and in Bengali it's putunnach. Yes? A dancing puppet pulled by the modes of material nature. But Krishna is eternally aloof from the flow of the qualities of illusion, regardless of what appears to be going on between Sri Sri Radha and Krishna. It has nothing to do with the vision of my mind that cannot see beyond the three modes of material nature. It is the most pristine, pure love. There's not the slightest trace of the mode of passion, the mode of ignorance, or even the mode of goodness. It is on a level that, practically speaking, is inconceivable for someone who can only conceive what he has experienced in this life. But by the power of the Bhagavatam, by the power of the holy names, perhaps a little, by the power of Giriraj, by the power of the deities, by the power of devotees, perhaps a little. It is said that in Kirtan, Mahaprabhu caused Vaikuntha, the spiritual world, to descend. So when we have Kirtans, Sankirtans, and everyone is chanting with full-heartedness, there is a taste that's completely different from the goodness, passion, and ignorance of this world. Perhaps we can get a little taste of something to do with what Krishna's leelas are like, and then have nothing to do with the material world. But that spiritual world, we can only go by that leela gita, rasana sevana, and we serve that leela gita, we serve the kirtan through participating in it, through hearing and chanting. And then if our taste grows, then by the mercy of Krishna and the devotees and the Dham and the deities, and then we could be there. He's eternally aloof from the flow of, not like the Mayavadis say, that the Maya is so powerful that even when God comes, he's infected by the mode of Satwagun and he becomes Ishwara. No touch of any modes of nature. Sambhavam Yapma Maya. He comes by his own internal potency. We use the word incarnation, but he's never incarnate. He's never in flesh. We use the term he descends to this world, but he never descends to this world. He is never in this world. He is always above this world. His descent means that he gives the ability for some fortunate souls to see and participate. I bow down to you, Narada Muni says, the supreme controller, Ishwaram, who are dependent only on yourself, Swa-asrayam. You don't perform your pastimes because you don't steal butter because you need butter. You don't dance with the wives of others because you have some need like that. It's just rasa, Krishna playing with his energies. This is how it's seen from the tattva point of view. This is how Narada Muni is seeing it. But from the point of view of the residents of Vrindavan, he's just our boy, our lala, our nandanandana, our Yashoda nandana, our rasa vihari. So that's from the highest rasa point of view. So you depend only on yourself. This is the interplay of Krishna's energies from the tattva point of view. And by your potency, Atma Maya, you have constructed the unlimited particular arrangements of this universe. Veneer Matasesha Vishesha Kalpanam. So the body is working, the blood is flowing through the veins and the arteries, and the heart is bumping and the brain is pulsating. And if the scientists have 60 billion quadrillion years, they will never understand the depth of it. And the more deeply they study, the more complicated questions they find. So the devotee doesn't try to dissect the material world, but he knows that behind it all is Krishna, and he offers his obeisances to Krishna and chants his holy name with gratitude. At least, I've heard you point this out many times, at least we should have gratitude. It's the beginning of appreciation, gratitude, moving towards true affection. Now you have appeared as the greatest hero amongst the Yadus, Vrishnis, and Satvatis. And you have chosen Kridartam to participate in human warfare, Manusha Vigraham. Sukadev Goswami said, having thus addressed Lord Krishna, the chief of the Yadu dynasty. So now they're moving him into the mode of the chief of the Yadu dynasty instead of Giridhari. Narada then bowed down and offered him obeisances. And then that great sage and most eminent devotee took his leave from the Lord and went away, feeling great joy at having directly seen him. And what did Krishna do next? This unlimitedly powerful Lord, what was his next activity? Bhagavan Api Govindo Hatva Keshi Nama. After having killed Keshi, Govinda, Bhagavan, Pasun Apalayet Palai, with the animals and with his cowherd boys, Pritta Vraja Sukhavaha. Sukhavaha. What a nice name. It means, Avaha means one who brings sukha, happiness, to Vraja. So this is what Krishna did. After killing the demon Keshi in battle, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Bhagavan continued to tend the cows and other animals in the company of his joyful cowherd boyfriends. Thus, he brought happiness to all the residents of Vrindavan, and in doing so, he was happy. So that is 98% of our presentation, but there's 2% more left. And listen very, and it has so much relevance to the power of prema, and also so much relevance to how we should really be chanting Krishna's names. Please listen to the words of Srila Prabhupada. Only 3 minutes.
Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mayapur, 1975.
The Supreme Lord is within you. He's there. But he'll advise when you are fixed by tapasya, determined with bhav, then he'll talk to you. He's ready to talk, but you require to acquire the qualification to hear him. And what is that qualification? This Krishna consciousness, devotional service. As it is said in the Bhagavad Gita, Tesam satatu yuktana bhajatam priti purvagam. Such persons don't do it.
You're laughing, but if it was you, you wouldn't be laughing.
Tesam satatu yuktana. Satata means always, 24 hours. Not that 5 minutes I meditate and rest of the time I live like cats and dogs. No. This kind of meditation will not help you. Krishna says, satata. Satata means 24 hours. You have to mold your life in such a way that 24 hours you'll think of Krishna. This is Krishna consciousness. If you think that I have chanted my 16 rounds, now I've finished my business. Now I can do whatever nonsense I like. No. Krishna says no. Sajata. Therefore we have to plan our life in such a way that we haven't got any other engagement than service of Krishna. This is the plan. Tisham satata yuktana. Satata means 24 hours. Yukta means engaged. What is that engagement? Bhajatam, bhaja, sivayam, to serve Krishna. Bhajatam, how? Priti purvakam. Not that, Krishna has said, all right, let me do. No, with love and affection. Then you'll get attachment. Unless you develop love for Krishna, you cannot be engaged 24 hours. That is not possible. Therefore it is said, priti purvakam, not officially, but with love. If you acquire this qualification, then you will talk with Krishna who is within your heart. He will give you instruction so that you can get rid of this hellish condition of life and go back to home and back to Godhead.
Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai.